Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Reveille, reveille, donks. Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
Oh, yeah, they say Virginia is for lovers. We wouldn't know that because we're in Cleveland, Ohio. Does it rock, Luke? You're going to have to decide. Brian Campbell, Luke Thomas, Morning Combat, in the echo chamber here known as this former turn of the century speakeasy here in this.
Do you remember that scene from Pulp Fiction where they were like, bring out the gimp?
Yes.
That's where we are.
That's where we are, in the bowels of this place. But happy to be here in Cleveland, Ohio. I know what you're saying. Wasn't this week supposed to be about reunions, right? Well, the first one is happening right here because, Luke, you and I have not done a show together. Forget about proximity, brother. Have not done a show together. In 2.5 weeks, Luke, in 2021, God bless you and your family. Who goes on a 2-week vacation? You know, the Canadians are coming. It's Woodley Paul fight week. You know, did you just pick out, open the calendar and just, you know, shoot a fluid out and whatever bingo chip it fell on, you know, that the cow might shit and we'll get the win here?
I don't know what you're asking. I don't know what that means. Was that English?
It was a combination of a lot of,
minimum. I took 2 weeks because I didn't take a vacation in 2020, and if I didn't, my wife was going to leave me. So, there you go.
I've been there. We must protect this house.
Pretty simple calculus.
Really. Luckily, Luke, and we'll get into your vacation and all that and catch up on our 2 weeks missed. Your boy BC was able to hold it down. But we're back together, and the event, of course, is Sunday night. Showtime pay-per-view. Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, your boys BC and LT, you've been on the ground covering all that shit, sucka, including Wednesday's outdoor workout, public, media workout and interviews, which was a great time hosting that with you, even though I sweat just an inordinate amount. I didn't believe that my body could produce that much sweat.
Only you looked like a dad who had to give over his financial information before divorce court. I mean, it was bad.
No more Rumble Johnson jokes, please. And then Thursday.
That's credit card jokes.
And then Thursday is today, and you and I hosted the final press conference, which got a little bit hairy in there, which we're going to get into and really break that down. It's your lead story on freaking TMZ.com right now with your boys in that third graph from the top. And, we'll be hosting Saturday's weigh-in, and it's a wild time here in Cleveland. So let's start right there, Luke. Your impression, a couple days in, does the land lead you to believe anything?
People here are miserable. Cleveland sucks. I mean, it's fine. The people are very nice, but there's not many of them. Like, you go to downtown. I've discovered this. Like, I've been to a few downtown Midwestern cities. They're empty. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, if you go to downtown Chicago or downtown L.A., well, downtown L.A. is actually like half Skid Row, but New York, Philly, D.C., like, there's people. There's nobody here. It's weird.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I didn't even know the Cleveland Indians going to be changing that name to the Guardians.
How did you miss
very
that news?
Shortly. Look, this is a tight
circle. Were you on
the circle, a bubble here. That is my life of all things combat sports. Now, wrestling's making a comeback in my life. I don't have the time to read your sports headlines. I know every morning you got to open up something and check out how that Washington football team did.
Poorly is usually the answer.
Yeah. I couldn't care regarding that. But you and I will be, by the way, taking in an Indians game Friday night.
That's right.
Some of our friends and family here at Showtime.
Here is how fucking spoiled we are. I asked him, I was like, hey, do you want to go to the, is there a ball game in town for the time we're here? He's like, actually, there is.
Red Sox, maybe.
And he was like, but, you know, I don't want to go get tickets and sit in the thing. I was like, you know what would be great? What we should do, if Showtime pays for a suite.
That'd be
then
sweet.
We'll go. And then sure enough, our producer greets us. He's like, hey, we have a suite at the ball game on Friday. We're like, Indian fans.
Like, the
right
only
here.
Problem is we're going to put you in a post-World War II hotel. That's the only problem.
This hotel is just...
It's fantastic. But Paul Woodley is what's getting us fired up this week. And I mentioned reunions. Good Lord. Has the good Lord helped just open up the flood of storylines and nonfiction goodness for what will be documentary number 5. Even less than Jake, our documentarian, not even on the team this week doing this documentary.
Our normal guy who makes the doc is actually following Tyron Woodley 24/7 for the All Access show.
So he will have a hand afterwards, as he always does, is in taking all this chicken shit and trying to make chicken salad out of it.
That's right.
But he won't be the guy following us around. So maybe it'll be like when the new Star Wars split. Movies get the different director each time, and then suddenly you got episode 9 and everybody's standing around like their things caught between their legs, you
yeah.
know? So what, maybe Doc 5,
so like the 9th movie is just Chewbacca playing the trombone.
Yo, Chewbacca's like, fuck
Chewbacca,
you know?
Will fuck that ass up.
I wonder if Doc, you know, Doc 4 was a surprise hit, because there was a lot of pressure coming off of Doc 3. Luke, it was abstract, it was BC holding that shit together with
docs,
like physical comedy and shit.
Those docs do barely any better numbers than your boxing interviews.
And
I mean, the
say,
amount of attention you give them is really disproportionate.
Doc 4, a surprise hit. I mean, I had famous people reaching out to me.
Our producer is over there nodding when I said that about the numbers.
Yeah.
You gotta get those numbers up, player.
Well, Doc 5 is going to get a little bit saucy. We've got a lot. You know, sometimes you just, you got the doc cameras around, anything can happen, and you happen to pick up something juicy as shit. We got it. Can't wait for the people to see it. Reunions about two worlds collide. Rival nations.
I think your mic went dead. You just all of a sudden got dead in my ear.
That was just your soul, you know?
My soul left whatever was left in my body a long time ago.
USA and Canada are going to have a rematch of that Olympic hockey final from a little bit more than a decade ago this week. We'll see what happens on Doc 5 and see the end of that. But we're getting a chance to catch up. There is. Look at what Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. By the way, we don't have a rundown for this show. We're just taking. It's like Coach Peters, the Naugatuck High football coach. Not a great gym teacher. State championship winning coach, though. You know what his gym classes were? Roll out the balls. I got to go game plan for Friday night's game. You guys do what you want.
Was he a Sandusky acolyte?
Yes. No. I thought you meant like the hardworking people of Sandusky, Ohio. From Tommy Boy.
No.
You know?
I was talking about something much worse.
We are the factory types. Not that type, though. Okay.
You know what we need in the background is more people walking around.
Yeah, just staring at us.
Just comfortable Gaff coming and going.
Gaff's been an MVP this week. Shout out to Gaff.
But I know. Can I tease my producer? Is that okay with you?
Luke, there's a lot of things I want to talk about this weekend.
All right,
we're talking about the press conference. There's a lot of things to talk about. One of them, though, is this event like brought together multiple worlds yet so far in a good way? All of our MMA media brethren are on the ground this week. There's a few boxing guys, but it's much more MMA heavy with Tyron Woodley, former UFC champion.
I agree with that.
So far.
You mean on the ground?
On the ground so far. All I'm saying is it feels like people are happy to be there. You usually get that feeling right when you show up to cover Fight Week. If, like, the fans and the media, are they happy to be there, or are they just going through the motions? This one feels like people are happy to be here. No one knows if Jake Paul's for real. You're obviously polarizing the split if you think he's entertaining and fun or you think he's an absolute douchebag. But I feel like people are coming together this week because it's bringing in so many different potential audiences. Tommy Fury's on the undercard, so to speak. You know, a women's co-main event, a lot of different pots there that I kind of like the... This is like a wedding with multiple weird families.
Yeah, it's actually a good way. I like that. It is a wedding between like disparate families from different parts of the world. I actually feel like on the ground, and there's no way to really measure that. I mean, Showtime would, like the PR people would know better. I actually feel like it's pretty close to a 50-50-ish kind of split with media.
In terms of predictions for the fight? Or?
No, just in terms of like who's here. Like today at the presser, when I was looking at who was there, there were the MMA sides. So you had like Casey Lydon from MMA Fighting. You had... Ellie Seckback was in the front from boxing.
The Schmo, baby. Okay.
Schmo, he's crossing over. He does a lot of boxing now, too. So does Marcos Villegas from Fight Club. He does both boxing and MMA.
It's pronounced Marcos Villegas.
You can pronounce it that way. That's true.
Yeah, I do.
In any event, like I felt like it was a pretty decent cross-section of both. But you're right. Do you know what's funny? I mean, maybe you disagree with this because you covered boxing much longer. I always feel like when I go to MMA events, a little tense with the media. It's a little...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I go to boxing events, and there's beef, But everyone's a little bit less on edge.
Sometimes the feeling can change depending on what network is putting on the fight, depending on which promoter is the lead promoter.
Oh, I see.
There can be a difference. Sometimes you do have those UFC-type feels where it's just contention between media and... Yeah. and
but see, for this one, Jake and Tyron have done an absolute assload of media. Anybody who wanted a one-on-one with him has basically gotten him at this point.
Yeah.
So, like, no, media aren't like... trying to shove each other out of the way to be the first one to get a microphone in the other guy's face.
They provide a lot of access. We know that Jake is not only the top billing here in the face of this whole celebrity crossover boxing movement. He's got his own Showtime pay-per-view deal, but he's also like the co-producer of this event, co-promoter of this event.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how much we can say, but he's 50% in control of
everything. He's wearing a lot of hats and he's pulling it off. And how it went down, talking to our boys from Submission Radio, shout out to Casper and Dennis. And they had asked me, will this one live up to the commercial expectations? One thing I said was, you're going to need something juicy. Or you're going to prefer. You're going to want something juicy that happens in one of these press events. It was unplanned and not the juice we expected to get. But we talk about, this is a non-traditional fight city in Cleveland, so we can make Cleveland jokes about the despair and the loneliness. But I like that it's a different setting. It's a special night, special time, and sort of special fight within your typical boxing pay-per-view realm. And then today we got I don't want to call it a special outcome, because Tyron Woodley's mother was unfortunately verbally accosted, and there was nearly a riot that local police showed up. I mean, we were lucky it didn't turn into something crazy, but I talked about being the lead story on something like TMZ.com. It got there, right? The news got there that there was something wild that went on. What do you think that effect will be? Twofold. The intensity of the fight, and I thought the press conference, by the way, that led up to it was good back and forth.
Pretty good.
Made you laugh. It was whatever. But in terms of the intensity of the fight and in terms of the potential pay-per-view buying up.
I don't think there's any doubt that it helps the pay-per-view buys. How much remains to be seen? I guess we'll never know, or we won't know until all the buys are in. But there's no denying. And by the way, some folks are going to say, oh, this was staged and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that, the cynicism is generally warranted. I don't think that's necessarily true, but certainly I can understand why people might believe that. That's fine. I wouldn't really argue with it. What was interesting to me was Tyron afterwards said, no, this doesn't add anything. I had maximum competitive preparation and fire for this prior to this. I do, and it wasn't Jake who did it. Jake was actually in the back. It was actually some of his dudes and his people.
Jake has a large extended team all dressed in Cleveland Browns bright orange and dark brown.
Yeah, the worst color pairing on earth.
They were everywhere. And, Beef started. And then we saw Tyron Woodley's sister get
that's
in
what,
that
dude's that's what they,
face.
So basically there was a dude in the... There were several. This is the difference between MMA and boxing pressers. I should say UFC and boxing. In UFC, unless it's like a really big presser... they will absolutely control who is in there.
If it's
in
a
boxing,
fight, they'll so look, step back and let something happen. But if it's not
true.
A counter
that's
fight, they are weary of the commission's findings.
So I always go back to it, but I remember when Lamont Peterson fought Amir Khan, and this was at the time when Khan had Khan's army following him everywhere he would go. Lamont got a questionable decision in that fight, and at the post-fight presser, Khan's army was there. So basically, the boxing pressers, they'll just let in entourages, fans, whoever, randos.
I mean, the same guy who talked shit to Conor McGregor wearing the loud sport coat was also
there.
In attendance today.
He was there.
But he was playing peacemaker, trying to keep Tyron back, having the relationship through Dean Thomas as radio co-host in Miami.
Yeah.
But it was just a wild
point this out. Boxing is the events. They're always more of a circus. Every time.
And I thought...
weigh-ins the whole night.
And I thought today really hit the mark with the trash talk. And it was corny at times, but it was funny. Both, meaning Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul, were pretty edgy and smart and on point in terms of establishing, Tyron feels overlooked and he feels like, you're just being a clown. I mean, Jake Paul was shirtless with a lot of ice, tats showing everywhere, wild beard. Where did you fall on the line between the extremes of trying too hard and lame, or like, man, this guy's so cool, he just can't help but keep doing cool shit? Where did you fall in terms of the look and feel that pissed off Tyron Woodley?
Yeah, I think I said this briefly on the broadcast before we were interrupted by that whole melee, which was my first reaction when the presser was over was I thought that Tyron basically handled it as well as he could have. This is, in many ways, the Jake Paul show. I did feel bad for Tyron, which is Jake Paul, and I didn't feel bad for Tyron that Jake Paul said mean things, because that's just the game and you just got to deal with it. I did feel bad that if you're new to this, or you're a Jake Paul fan, or you kind of know who Tyron Woodley is, or like the last four fights is all you really know about him, it's like, dude, Tyron Woodley in his prime was a motherfucker. He was a great fighter. And you even heard Jake Paul say, I'm going to show you that being a UFC champion over here in boxing means absolutely nothing.
He said, I don't respect what you did.
Yeah, I don't respect shit about you. And I was like, dude, I felt bad because I was like, dude.
When Tyron was on it, he had a great fucking career. It ended badly or whatever for UFC, but I don't know. I felt did you not feel a little bit like he's
that.
Being like disrespectful?
Here's what's interesting, though, and because Jake Paul is so polarizing, you could watch the pre-melee part of the press conference, just the talking,
yeah.
And you could be on either. And if you're on either side, I bet you're 100% on either side. Meaning, you either think he's the lamest Jake Paul, the lamest circus clown sort of guy who rolled out of bed and just kind of stumbled into this. Or you could see him as this meme, ahead of the game, entrepreneurial, genius, troller who just constantly knows how to light off these firecrackers to piss people off. I mean, he was on point from that regard. So I think that it could baby face up, so to speak, to steal a wrestling term, and making Tyron Woodley almost the one that more people are cheering for. And then you have that melee, which again wasn't Jake's fault. It was an extended member of his team who talked some trash and got in Tyron's mother's face allegedly and yelled, talked some crap to her and said some pretty inappropriate things. But it was when you see the headlines of like Jake Paul's teammate messes with Woodley's mama, that's going to make Woodley a sympathetic, and you're already going to have enough people just wanting to see Jake Paul get knocked out, whether they're a boxing purist that doesn't want to welcome in, or whether you're just a hater of that culture and all the things going on with the YouTube social media influencers. I feel like Tyron Woodley kind of won in different ways from this press conference if there's victories to be had.
I thought it clarified some of the roles. We discussed this yesterday at the media workout, which was Tyron spent a lot of his UFC run as like a chip on my shoulder, me against the world, up against management, kind of like an F you to everybody. I don't get the credit I deserve. And taking on someone as polarizing as Jake Paul, that kind of flipped. But think about it. Who, I'm not saying she's the most popular person, but who has the highest likability rating in all of MMA? It's Tyron Woodley's mom by a country mile.
Holly Holm's pretty close in that regard too. Okay?
But the point
being, she gets white babyface pops when she shows up at like public workouts, like
that's
white
fine.
Meat babyface, like cheering for the good of the world people that come
that's
out.
Fine.
There, okay?
That's fine. That's fine. Whatever you want to say, going against Tyron Woodley's mom, or at least bringing her into this whole thing, even if you didn't know who she was, you're just a boxing fan, you're going to be like, dude, what the fuck is up with that? Like, it kind of clarified that there, whatever, I mean, and if you're a Jake Paul fan, you won't believe this, but it kind of clarified that Jake Paul, while he's running the show, is a little bit rubbing people the wrong way, and that Tyron is adopting a role where he's presumed to be much more likable than he was during his UFC run.
Okay, you know what I liked about Jake Paul's performance in Thursday's press conference? I mean, he's all freaking in.
The sleep line was pretty funny.
He has a stupid amount of confidence in BDE, to steal a term from the show.
He really does.
I mean, he has an excessive amount. So either he really is just a loudmouth badass who's going to figure out a way to knock out Tyron Woodley and talk to all this shit leading up because he's just like, man, I can't lose. Or this is going to be a humbling loss on Sunday night, because I feel like the more that we've seen from Tyron Woodley, whether it be workout videos, whether it be the interview you and I had with him, which is available on YouTube, youtube.com/morningcombat, all the interviews that we did, I just feel like Tyron Woodley okay. So our video is playing on the TMZ Sports
site.
Page.
Yeah, that's
not
cool.
Not bad. Luke, you want clicks. You want energy. You put BC there and just unleash it.
Yeah,
me, okay?
that was the really
I know
the
your
magic
old sweaty
there, right?
Ass was sweating up that. People don't even understand. I know I played the fool on Wednesday. I sweat in the public square with the tent. People didn't see the tent around us. It was hot as balls, and my shirt and my body did not stand up to the pressure they were on. But what overshadowed their failure was my willingness to fight through it and dominate. Okay, so that's established, right? You are a sweaty freaking mess today, and it wasn't even
an outdoor
situation. It was like
it was
a two
an outdoor
block
situation.
Walk.
It was not two blocks,
but it wasn't like you were
like, dude.
I know I don't have ground to stand on right now.
You don't, and everything you've said in the last 2 minutes has been false. Everything you have said, literally.
You don't understand the BC you are receiving. You took 2 weeks off. You left a barren landscape in the Morning Combat universe, although I thank you to our friends in the business who helped fill in some of those gaps and the cracks and the holes. But Luke, it's like you left me there with this giant machine of just BDE that I can plug in and just blow up. And I'm just getting blown by this machine, Luke, and I am full. My head is huge right now,
yeah,
Luke.
I know. You shouldn't be, because you should see my DMs about you.
Would you say, okay, let's put our cards on the table. Would you say that I'm the Jake Paul of MMA media?
No, you're nothing close to the Jake Paul of media. I'll say this. It was funny because
we got that same BDE though, right?
You definitely don't. I was funny. I was looking at my DMs from the show, or I'm just, you know, on vacation. And I told BC this at the airport. They were split right down the middle. I mean, 50-50, not 51-49, 50-50. I would get one that would be like, Luke, you ain't missed. Fucking BC is captain of this ship. Fucking find another job. I'd be like, damn, BC must be killing it. And then I'd look at the next DM and it'd be like, how is this colobus monkey hired alongside of you? Fire this loser immediately.
First of all, I get that there's people that, I mean, they don't have any personality or want or understanding of art. So I get that there's going to be not even a 1%, maybe even like a 15, 20%. I'll give you the credit. You have built up a large audience. And in that large audience is the hardcore MMA fan. They only want the technical breakdown. Sorry, guys, dissected, not coming back right now. And this guy not man enough to fight to bring it back.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Wow.
That's the issue.
Get a little on you, some of that BDE. So my point is you're always going to have.
Look at me. No one has ever accused you of having BDE that's a female, ever.
You're always going to have that percentage.
I'm
going to
ask your wife if you have BDE.
Aside,
when you're out there, when she tells you to mow the fucking yard.
I think there's some people that just, they're missing what I'm doing. They don't even get the reference of what I'm doing. So they think I'm just talking into a funnel of ridiculousness.
So what I basically gathered, I was like, well, BC must be being himself. And honestly, though, that's kind of the way that it should be. It should be that. The two bring different things, and then when it gets together, it's like baking soda and vinegar. It just explodes, bro. Just explodes. I do want to say
people want us to be friends. I don't want to be friends with your ass.
I like being friends with you, actually. I'll say this about Tyron Woodley before we completely get off of it. I feel like heading into this week, I was a little bit like, yeah, he's gonna get run over, and I still think he'll probably lose. Are you getting a little bit of we're overlooking him vibes?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I was sort of trying to point to just a few minutes ago before I had to really put it out there how well I kept this shit and the ship afloat with this guy just gone from the hemisphere. I will say that Tyron Woodley has won me over with his confidence, poise, which are things that like we already knew about him coming in. So it's like you got this guy that they both have questions that can only be answered in the ring. Yet Woodley's already answered a lot of these foundational questions that we don't know if Jake has. Oh, Jake's got BDE with the shirt off in front of the microphone. But what does Jake have in round three? What does Jake have in round four? I feel like there's more of a safe bet in certain categories from Woodley that we are just dismissing, maybe because of 39 years old, four straight losses in the UFC. The assumption, which I have fallen on that sort of, oh, well, you know, Jake Paul's a lot bigger. He's a bigger boy. Well, he is a bigger boy.
He's not huge.
Trying to say, I'm only 4 inches shorter than him. I'm at that walk around weight all the time.
Whole thing about like Jake Paul is enormous. No, he's not. He's about normal for an athlete at 190. It's not. There's nothing particularly, you know, unusual about his size in that sense.
But would you say, between the words they exchange and all of the public incidents and you know the media moments this week, all the interviews they've done elsewhere, that Tyron Woodley's story is properly being told this week? His chances of potentially winning this fight are now, as you look at the odds, which are very close, being properly sold, that if Jake Paul still comes over the top and knocks him out, it will be looked at as even more impressive if it's done right. Like, it's building up now where Tyron's getting, he's not over, he's, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't know. Like, sort of. I still, you know, on Showtime, not obviously having access to some of the footage from UFC about what Tyron did hurts the storytelling, right? It's hard to tell without exactly seeing. And he was good in Strikeforce, but that wasn't the very best of him.
He didn't use his hands in Strikeforce much.
And then when he did against Marquardt, it went quite poorly. So the point is this. In that sense, it's kind of hard to tell what Tyron did. I don't know. I mean, listen, when he beat Askren, I was like, dude, this is a clear setup where you just want to beat someone who was a UFC fighter that was an Olympian, you could say, wow, you're beating UFC fighters. But, like, the guy was retired, had a hip replaced before the whole shit. Tyron's not in that ballgame. But this is the point I wanted to make. Like, yesterday when we talked to him, and even today, or all these interviews, when we asked him what went wrong with the last four losses, he was like, well, I was caught up living the lifestyle. And it's like, okay, he's answered questions to your point about, you know, what can you show when you're in the middle of adversity and how high can you climb? Those broader questions he's answered. But about the last four fights, there's a lot of unanswered questions. Like, on the one hand, I am very much of the belief that, like, I don't know, I feel like we're kind of overlooking Tyron a little bit. I don't know how, which way and how it's going to go. But the other part of me is like, dude, am I supposed to believe you're going to lose four times like that and all of a sudden just turn it around because Jake Paul's relatively novice in boxing? Maybe. But I haven't heard a sufficient answer for me to think that he can turn around that problem.
Or maybe what we said on day one when this fight was announced is still true, that it's perfect matchmaking because don't know what it's going to look like. Like, I could entertain both scenarios of dominance either way and completely believe it from what I know coming in. But I think the best case scenario is that they hurt each other. They both have to get up off the canvas, and we kind of see in this moment who's the tougher one and more suited for this. And I'm like, I've said this all along. Like, the guy who wins may not be the better boxer of the two because we're at such a low novice ability that you can just swing for the fences and see what happens. Yeah,
this is the part I want to say. It's a great. I really agree. I think that's a smart way to put it, PC. It's like
PC.
Did I say PC?
Yeah, that could not describe me.
Okay. Piss Campbell, new name. In all seriousness, someone might win this for reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with demonstrating superior boxing skill. Yeah. That is entirely possible. And a finish, by the way, is even possible in that way.
That's wild.
So when you think about it that way, it's like, you know, does it prove a whole lot for Jake? This is the thing I was wrestling with for the last couple of weeks is, what does a win, a non-controversial win, but what does a win over Tyron Woodley actually mean? Forget about what fight it sets up. In the ring, what value can be conferred upon Jake based on those results? And it's very hard to understand and know.
If it was a blowaway first-round knockout, I don't think he would get as much. It would fit into the theme still of you're fighting stiffs, non-boxers older fighters and stiffs. If he could overcome some type of adversity in a fun fight, because the fun fight element would carry the genre forward, right? Yes. It'd be like, well, man, win or that's lose, what, I want to see
that
this.
Was what the problem was with Mayweather and Logan. It was right. Like Mayweather was supposed to knock him out, didn't. And so Logan overperformed in the sense that he didn't get finished.
But he underperformed in the sense of entertainment completely.
And it was boring. It was basically boring. These two, they got to get after
this. This is the one. I feel it in that regard. And it's not me wishing it for our own numbers or paychecks. It's the fact that I think everyone understands and realizes, and then maybe that's why there's such a big media turnout, that this has some very interesting future long-term implications, but just the actual fight itself. And now you add what happened today at the press conference. This has the potential to be wild. Luke, it's switching gears to a degree, but it's still in the same ballpark of the themes we're representing. When you were going through your DMs while on vacation, was there any fear given your large distrust of management, even with companies that you currently work for at times, because of how jaded you are as a person?
Yes.
Part of you was like, man, I hope BC didn't do so well solo that maybe just the time being away, Willie Pep, like maybe I just wore out my welcome because of his performance. Like that BDE was so strong, brother, that like maybe I come back to same chair, it's not as comfortable. You know?
Are you asking me that was I worried in my absence that they would realize they could do the show with you alone?
Absence does make everyone else's heart that normally deals with you fonder.
No, I gotta tell you, I looked at the subscription numbers in my absence, and I realized pretty quickly that this ship will sink if I'm not here.
Okay, all right. Well, it's great to have you back. Are you going to wait until this evening's room service diaries, Cleveland style, to tell your horror story with vacation and the...
Should I tell it here or should I tell it on
you know,
RSD?
It's up to you. You are a content creator. I don't, you know...
I can tell it here. I can tell it here since you brought it up. So basically, BC knows the whole story. My vacation was a nightmare. It started out a nightmare. It did not end up one. But long story short, my wife and I had planned. She hadn't seen her family in a couple of years because of the pandemic, and everyone knows the whole
story.
These
are the Colombians.
That's right.
For context.
So we were flying to Colombia on my first day of vacation, and my wife, the flight luckily was not till 4 p.m. And my wife woke up with the baby around 6:30, and she woke me, and she goes, I can't smell or taste anything. And I'm like, oh Jesus, fuck. All right. I said, look, let's just go get a COVID test and see how this goes. And because she's fully vaxxed with Pfizer. And so she went and got a test. And sure enough, she had COVID. So
Did she have the Delta brand or the the original?
Mm-hmm. She did. Oh. So then the doctor, you know, tells us that the kid has to get tested and everyone else in the house has to get tested. So Felipe, who was there,
Uncle Pepe,
he has Moderna vaccine. He did not get it.
Okay. Strong genes.
I got tested. Yeah. I did not get it. My daughter got tested. She did not get it. So we had a call with the pediatrician and everything else. We had to get tested every fucking day. It was fucking awful. But it was pretty miraculous because within 3 days, all of her symptoms went away. And I never got it. Felipe never got it. The nanny didn't get it. And
Abuela.
Abuela's in Colombia. Okay. And the more important one is the only one who was unvaxxed in the house was my daughter. She did not get it. So the doctor doesn't really know. But his best explanation was what probably happened was that the viral load that my wife was shedding was so small that A, my vaccine and natural antibodies, whatever, stopped it. And then the kids, obviously, they're much more resistant to COVID than adults, and it resisted it as well. So the vaccine, the doctor believes, again, who the fuck knows, but he believes that it was important because otherwise everyone in the house would have gotten it.
And it was a tense situation. I'm so glad that it worked out well, although you did use viral load and your wife in the same sentence. I could not get away from that.
Yes, I didn't say jizz load. I said
Tommy
viral
Fury's
load.
Like Tommy Fury's DMs? What's going on here?
But the long story short is we had to call and cancel everything. Let me give a recommendation. If you are flying anywhere and they ask you, hey, do you want the little insurance on your ticket for like 10 bucks or whatever it is, 20 bucks, buy that shit. Because what happened was when my wife got it, she calls up Avianca, which is the airline, and they're like, unless you can prove it with your insurance, because she bought the thing with the test. So if you have the insurance with a positive test, they gave us a 100% refund on the tickets. I was fucking blown away by that. So folks, whether you're vaccinated or not, when you travel somewhere, buy the ticket insurance. It will save you in the end.
True or false, though? And thankfully, your wife turned out fine, although COVID did cancel the Colombian trip.
It did.
You switched gears and said, let me go to a place where they don't recognize COVID.
That's right.
And still have a vacation. So you flew to Florida.
Florida. So what happened was we waited for my wife to get 2 full days of full negative PCR tests. So that happened after about 5 days. She had no symptoms after 3, happened after about 5. We were just chilling at home like nothing happened. Yeah. So then we figured out, all right, let's go to Florida here's what we looked at. The kids in Florida are back in school. So we looked at the availability of the parks, Hollywood Studios, Magic Kingdom. Everything was wide open. All the hotels, wide open. Everything was wide open. My wife's a meeting planner. I said, get to work. So
make me a sandwich, bitch.
Not quite like that. So she went and booked everything. And so we went to Florida. We stayed at a great hotel about 10 miles from Magic Kingdom. Had a great lazy river in the pool. There was hardly anybody there. There was hardly anybody else at Magic Kingdom. And that was my daughter's first trip. And it was...
She seemed to love it.
She seemed to have a freaking great time. It wasn't much... You know how this goes. They don't tell you this. When you're a new parent, and I say new within, you know, a kid is still not really speaking the language fully.
A child is how a dad would describe
you. You don't go on vacation for yourself. You go on vacation for them. You don't get a lot of rest. But... the kid was happy, which made me happy.
The child.
And I should ask you, my wife is completely fine. I'm fine. We never got it. Are your folks okay?
They are. They're doing well.
Very happy.
I mean, look, with the extreme level, especially that my mom had it, there's a recovery period and breathing.
It'll take time.
It takes time. But very, very happy for that. Happy that things turned out well for your wife. You know, you are the Dr. Luke Fauci of the show. So
yeah.
I didn't want to be playing any Alanis songs in the background.
I'm being honest with it.
Ironic or coincidental?
No, we had the reality. The reality is with the Delta variant, it can break through some of the vaccines. It broke through hers. But the good news is my wife barely had any symptoms. I never got it. My unvaccinated child never got it. And we were able to then pivot to go on vacations within about a week. So
I would like to, you know, build the legend of Pepe just for a second, or for as long as you'd hang with me on this. Does he swipe?
What does that mean?
Swipe right to
like,
say
is he on the
to say yes to chicks to potentially bang
oh
them?
Is he on like the apps?
Yeah, is he on the apps? Is Pepe? I mean, his bro, English is pretty good, right?
He's fluent. Yeah, he's not gonna watch this. So I'm gonna say this, dude. Pepe. Just laying pipe all over
different
continents. Dude, this guy's got like 3 girlfriends in Colombia that he
Pepe
can just
spreading the seed.
Dude,
just,
Uncle Pepe is fucking murdering the game.
He's
John Fury.
He's like the Ioli of this in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? It's incredible. Wow. Wow.
Something like that. Yeah,
shout out to Uncle Pee-Pee, indeed. Wow, what a guy. I'd love to get him on the show. I'd love to get your brother on the show. One day, Luke, this is your life.
I'll tell you this. Felipe would come on the show.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Uncle Pee-Pee would come on the show.
Okay.
My brother?
Nah.
I'll put it this way. Between my father and my brother, getting them on the show, you have a much better chance with my brother than you do my father. Getting my dad on, you'll get my dad on the moon before you get him on this show.
Okay, that's interesting. Let's see if I can pull some connections there. I'll
why don't you DM
them.
My brother again, see if that works.
That didn't work, but yeah. All right, so Luke, we were off for 2.5 weeks of doing it. You know, can you speak at least, because there were some people that were upset, and I don't think their long-term upsetness was justified, but the last 24 to 48 hours, they have called us out for not letting them know that there wouldn't be a live show on Wednesday, for no instruction, no tweet. Our social media team could not put out a tweet, Luke. Am I blaming them or directly you, who sometimes feels like you handle the load of these social ideas? It was a little bit disconcerting that you didn't care about the average fan who had to wait out 2 full weeks for you.
Yeah.
Then we don't tell them about Wednesday. We don't tell them about this bonus show.
Yeah.
It's kind of been a little bit of an SS, if you will. And I'm not talking about Steve Smoger, the Hall of Fame referee. I'm talking about shit show.
Yeah, it's been a shit show.
I'll apologize for that I didn't oversee that happening. Can you apologize at all of the, you know, we know that you had to protect this house. And I'm not talking about the structure of this, which is not strong.
Which you are
I'm
challenging
I'm talking about your, second not, second not even our marriage, your marriage. You got to put time for family. So I love that, Luke. But there's people that are going to say, the Canadians are coming. It's a big time in media right now. We gotta bang, bro.
Yeah, we haven't done a great job with anything. we did not do a good job. I don't feel like coordinating the vacations. We didn't do a good job of like how those shows were going to go. We didn't do a good job of like figuring out this week.
And did I mail in our 2 vacation Q&A shows? There's a possibility that
there's a little bit of mailing in that went there.
So I'm not going to put all the blame on you.
But I can't be mad about it. You got to do what you got to do. Like, I understand that. But here's what I can say. For all of the things that did not necessarily go as smoothly as they should have for the last couple of weeks, train is back on the tracks now. We are doing this show. We're doing a show tomorrow. We're doing the weigh-ins on Saturday. We'll do a post-fight show for MK on Sunday night. We are doing a room service diaries, a documentary. Things are back.
Things are back in a big way, okay?
We went on lockdown.
This piece just fell right into my lap. That is that is interesting. I'll work on this while we're talking.
Hey, I'll touch your lap.
No. That's
why? Is something wrong about that?
That's, you know.
There's no BDE with that. I just want to put this out here. I want to say it on air so everyone knows and now pressures you.
No, this is not.
Dying Fetus is playing at the Webster in Hartford, Connecticut on November 18th. I want him to go with me. He is resisting. We would film it for the documentary. If you want to see that.
I'm not a big fan of abortion rock.
If you want to see that, me and BC go see Dying Fetus November 18th. I want you to email the show, morningcombat@gmail.com. Cast your vote.
That Webster Underground Theater is in a bad part of Hartford, and it's got a history of rocking. I've seen at that venue.
You've been there.
Many times. But you got to be careful where you park. I mean, it's a thing there. I saw Twisted Sister there.
Oh.
I saw Sebastian Bach, Dickie Betts, Bob Weir and Rat Dog, and I feel like I've seen a couple like metal bands there as well.
Sebastian Bach is not. It's metal technically, but it's not.
Yeah, but there's some theatrical sort of singing.
That's the kind of metal my wife likes.
Okay. She's big into like. Does she like Slaughter? Because that was like the last great
like
metal album
yes.
right before Nirvana flipped the.
The kind of metal she likes that you wouldn't like would be like European black metal that you don't like that. But the American like hair metal stuff.
Yeah.
Like 1980s.
Okay,
in your face
do you stand
shit?
By this? They're kind of the Jake Paul of this scene. Poison in the 80s could have been, they were cheesy as F at times, but they could fucking rock, dude. I had front row tickets to see Poison in 02 and 03, heavily in the weeds for those shows, but they kicked ass, Luke. And that's their like washed up period, okay? Prime Poison, you're not into that? You're
I
not
didn't
feeling
see,
CC on guitar?
No, my wife dragged me to, not a Poison show, but she dragged me to, who was the guy, John Corabi? Who did he fill in for? He was like a part-time lead. Was it Motley Crue? Was he a...
We have some of our camera crew are
who
speaking
is it?
Up.
I can't hear you. Speak up. Motley Crue? He was like the brief lead singer, right? Yeah. So I saw John Corabi at like the soundstage in Baltimore. He was whatever. But then my wife took me to see, I guess it was, I think this was in the Nissan Pavilion, or maybe it's Jiffy Lube Pavilion, whatever it's called now. I saw Motley Crue there for one of their summer shows. I left the bitch. It was one of the worst shows I've ever seen.
See, that music doesn't typically age well in terms of the performance of it.
And right? I got lice at this place, you know, even though it was outdoors. So that's what you get when you go to Motley Crue.
Do you think
show.
You'll catch COVID here in Cleveland this week?
It's a guarantee. I mean, my wife had it in the house that I didn't get it, so.
We are following to a core and a T all by CBS.
Matt, am I going to get COVID here? Yeah, probably.
Luke, this show has been a little bit off the rails. I'm not looking to end it anytime, so I don't even know what time it is, but I like to entertain
people. We've been
on
for about 45 minutes.
You have a very important meeting this week. Can you get into
that? No. Not today. Not today. You got to wait for that to happen before we really get into it. We'll see how it goes.
All right.
Don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
I'm sorry. You know.
Don't do that.
We don't have commercials here. I can't. You know. I can't breathe.
Just throw it to commercial.
I just like to put you right in the fire. And you
know, asked. I want to say this. We asked Tommy Fury about his DMs, and he was like, "Oh, I don't even check them." Tommy Fury, you're lying.
Yeah, bro.
You're lying, buddy. Can you imagine the people, the women throwing?
If he didn't
themselves?
Check them, he'd been like, "What's that? I don't know. Is there a way you can email each other privately through an app?" He wouldn't have known. Although I did look up his. I mean, he is
how many followers
madly
does he have on Instagram?
In love with Molly May. Madly in love with her, okay? That she finished, I think she won the season of Love Island where he was runner-up. They're still dating. Did you hear the intensity, and I think all marriages should be like this, although he's not married,
right.
Of how much the commitment and love he has. That's why he said, I ain't even going in those bitches, those DMs. I don't need them. I am a man who is satisfied. I looked that couple up. Luke, that's a beautiful couple, okay?
Dude, if I looked like him... And I had his money and his fame, and I had DMs like that, and I was 22.
And eyes like that, Luke?
I would be just burning a trail through the United Kingdom. You know,
you and Pepe would go on a...
Me and Pepe just laying pipe.
You, Pepe, and Ron Mexico would be... That trio would be taking over the world. Yes. Wow. Look, did anyone hear
Ron
that
Mexico,
noise?
That was what Mike Vick called himself at the airport? Wasn't
it? That was his code name. When he would sex up the women, TikTok, you don't stop, he would call himself Ron Mexico, you know?
Oh, that's right. That's right. He got caught at the airport with the weed bottle. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and then there was like a thing with dogs. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did. Yeah, it made white people very mad.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Of course.
This is not a story of color, Luke. This was a story of, All right, Luke, you missed the return of Manny Pacquiao, a big fight in your absence. Did you watch that? Do you have any opinions on how all that went up?
I didn't see the Ugas fight. The only thing I saw was I did see some of your post-fight analysis about it, and I saw the scores and what everyone else had to say, and I read a lot about it after the fact. The only real takeaway I had about it, for someone who didn't see the fight, was just that Ugas is very talented. He deservedly won, as I understand it, like clear scorecard for him. That Manny Pacquiao made it competitive in spots, but more or less that was Ugas' fight. The only real takeaway I had from that was, dude, Manny got lucky. And I know there was the video where his eyes are so fucking swollen, he can't even open either of them.
His wife's feeding him soup. Like,
he's just fucked. Oh, I mean, it's just crazy. Okay. Dude, and I know Spence had the eye surgery because of the retina, but... He saved himself from a beating. Spence, I think, was going to do bad things.
See, I don't know. I think it's still the Styles.
You have a belief
thing.
In Manny Pacquiao that I don't think is warranted.
I think Pacquiao would have been able to get Spence into a brawl, and that would have given him his best chance to compete. I don't think he would have won, but to compete at a fairly even terms. If Spence had decided, I'm going to play you from the outside and just outbox you, could he have? Yeah, it's Spence, man. Okay? But I think Spence, like against Porter, would have let his hands go. Because Pacquiao would have been coming at him from certain angles that are not natural and
Spence
hitting him.
Spence dropped
and...
Porter.
Oh, I know. Spence can punch. But Spence also, after the fact, was like, man, I got too caught up in going forward there. I think that's what Pacquiao saw when he watched.
Okay, so maybe Pacquiao... Okay, even if you want to say this, Pacquiao would have performed ably against Spence in a losing effort. This is my point. Like, the main objection I had to the Spence... And Pacquiao fight was everyone was making a story about how great Manny Pacquiao's resume is, how he's taken on contenders is amazing this late in his career, and I think all of that is true, but I'm not going to call it a setup fight for Spence, but to me it actually sort of reaffirms what my initial suspicion was, which was everyone wants Spence Crawford, then they made Spence versus Pacquiao, and you were like, this fight is great for a lot of reasons, and I'm like, right, but it's the fight you didn't ask for.
Because
we would have
waiting
gotten that,
for
and it would have been exactly what we thought. Who's the guy? Singletary? They are who we thought they were. right?
That was actually Dennis Green.
Dennis Green, yes, from the Cardinals.
Mike Singletary was, I need winners.
Yes, that's what it
from
was.
From the 49ers.
So the point being is, dude, the fight was what we thought it was going to be. Like, there was no real mystery about it. I give credit to Ugas for coming on late notice and doing what he did, but to me, it's like boxing fans being like, oh, can't you like look at it like a magic eye and get some value from it? Not fucking really, no.
Wow. Okay. People did want to know what you thought about Kelvin Gastelum's loss to Jared Cannonier in a very important fight in the middleweight division for UFC.
How did you score that one?
I scored it 3-2. Cannonier gave him 3-4 and 5.
Yeah, that's how I scored it as well. Gastelum has to go back to welterweight. He just has to. The guys.
So you don't think my theory of if he makes his wrestling a threat at middleweight? Like, he's going to have to get in better shape for that. But if he can make his wrestling a threat, it will open up his striking. And some people are like, BC, it's the most casual take I ever heard.
It's not a casual take.
They're like, you can't do that at middleweight against these guys. I'm like, what if he got in shape and he made it more about cardio and pushing that pace? And that threat of the wrestling could open up his left hand so much more than I'm just going to follow you around. You know?
I think there's a few problems that Gastelum is wrestling with here. One, I think it's totally on point. I completely agree. Second part is, I do think he has to go back to welterweight. I really, really fundamentally believe that he's just not suited to beat the very high-level guys at 185. And maybe he can't beat the very, very best ones at 170, but I like his chances there a lot more, provided he is in good shape and the cut doesn't drain him. The third thing I would say is, and I talk about this guy a lot, but once you take the pill, you can't go back. There's a dude by the name of Coach Barry Robinson. He has coached several UFC fighters before, Dan Hooker and some other ones, but he has talked about something, I brought it up on the show before, called the rhythm step. And dude, it's not just this idea that you do this one particular step that you can pick up on. Kelvin Gastelum resets striking exchanges in such a way, I'm not his coach and I'm not here to tell him how to live his life, but if somebody like me could pick up on it, there's a problem. Every time he stands on the outside and he wants to close the distance to joust, he does the exact same kinds of things.
He picks up the Oreo cookie. He twists it just a certain way.
And every one of his opponents sees it and times it every single time.
Chick, chick, chick. Yes. Alligator blood.
He can punch. He's athletic. I think he can make reads. I think he's very talented. I do think also, to Aaron Bronstetter's point, look at his resume, Kelvin Gastelum's resume. Dude, he has fought nothing but the best over two weight classes. You must give him credit.
But my point, though, on the show,
so the last thing I'll say is, his striking, when he's executing on offense in close range, I like. To the extent he has to distance close, he gets timed constantly.
Extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal, light up the stage and have a jump like a candle, right?
I don't think that's the lyrics. Say it one more time.
I don't have to. So what I'm saying there is that at some point you are who you are in terms of your record, and Gastelum's entered there. But do you not give the same praise and respect I did in Cannonier for figuring out the technical advantage there and winning the fight the way he did? He got better since the loss.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Cannonier is a testament to one, getting to the right weight class. The guy started out like fucking what? Light heavyweight? Heavyweight?
Heavyweight, bro.
Heavyweight. And now he's down. Yes, that's right, because this is his third weight class in the UFC. So now he's down there. Plus, he moved from Alaska to MMA Lab in Arizona and has made profound changes developments to his technical progress and acumen. And it has paid clear dividends. Even against Robert Whittaker, he had him in trouble in that, or at least, you know,
right. Well, he had a moment in the third round, but the first two rounds he was like a step behind. I think
but Whittaker is very good.
Exactly, but I think he went back to the gym and was like, how do I fix what I did?
There's no doubt in my mind, and that to me is the difference, is you got Gastelum has all of the athletic tools, and at this point, the competitive experience, I think, to give anybody trouble. But to get over that hump, there has to be a new dimension to his offense, and I think he's got to clean up some of the things he does that makes him traceable and timeable.
With this connection to in friendship with Henry Cejudo, why doesn't he move to the captain's gym?
Dude, it's like he's training with Cordero. It's not like Cordero doesn't know how to make UFC champions. He does.
At some point, though, it stops being the potential effectiveness of that coach. Some fighters, boxing or MMA, they need the change. They need the constant switch. It's why some people are in one marriage for 30 years and some people are bouncing around like Uncle Pepe, just laying pipe, just laying that shit down.
I mean,
bro.
Latin America, just watch out. Uncle Pepe's on the move. It's true. This is the only thing I would say. Is it true that professional relationships come to a point where the two participants, coach and fighter, run out of Dude, you're not my coach. I don't know why you think
I'm saying that, like, this eventually we will be so sick of each other's jokes that this show is going to it's going to fall apart.
It will burn.
And it'll be spectacular.
But the point being is, to your point, yes, is it true that there becomes a point after even a successful relationship, the coach and the fighter just can't get anything out of each other anymore? Yes, that's true. It would require me to be at King's MMA for me to diagnose whether or not that is the case.
I just like saying Albarracin. I like pushing him into our show because of his style preferences. And he's also a really smart guy. He's one of those people,
surprisingly,
like me and Billy Hoyle, who have found a way, that's the Woody Harrelson's character in White Men Can't Jump, to, you know, I mean, it's hard goddamn work making something this brilliant, accessible in a way that feels so basic and simple, right?
Yes.
So, like, you know, Eric Scott the glasses always must be a clown. No, he's a genius under there.
He is a mad scientist. Yes, yeah. He's a genius. I agree with that. Well, genius is a strong word, but incredibly capable.
I mean, he was hammered at the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather fight and calling and just drunk calling you on video chat like over and over
again. Constantly sending me videos of of just drunken language I did not understand. Yeah. By the way, speaking of Albarracin, we should tell the folks who we saw today and talked to today.
AJ McKee.
Yeah.
Bellator featherweight world champion, who Sunday night will be a part of the desk kicking off the broadcast for Paul Woodley along with Logan Paul and Brian Custer. So that should be an interesting team to set the stage for that fight.
Dude, that kid leveled up, man.
But in talking to AJ, and I know there's stories out there and he confirmed it to us, there was an interview he gave with Ariel in MMA Fighting that essentially broke down, like, you know, they want to get paid from Bellator. They want to rip up the contract, which he has three fights left on now. And let's not, you know, let's figure out his true payment now. And what AJ told us was, you know, he hopes that happens, and that could open the door for that potential of some crossover boxing, which it's something he's very interested in. And talking to him quickly, Luke, he has no care about the weight experience level of these opponents. Like, he wants to do big shit.
He wants that smoke.
Yeah. So that was fun to hear. You
know? He's a smart kid, man. That dude, obviously everything he already pulled off is pretty incredible. He's not done wowing us, not even by a long shot. I don't know exactly which way and which organization and what it's going to look like, but...
Well, you had him break down to us.
He gave me all the details of how he beat Pitbull, and it was illuminating.
It turned out easier than he ever could have expected. Now, he hit him with the perfect shot at the perfect time. We're not here. That says nothing bad about Pitbull, but it was as if he was like, you know, I think I know what I'm going to do, and then the fight was just over.
Two things I took from the conversation was, one was they had scouted Pitbull really well. They knew what he was going to do. And then as he did those things, they made reads and adjustments off of it. And because I was asking him, like, did you know the head kick was going to be there? And the short answer is basically yes, that it was either going to be to the body or to the head, but they knew that he was going to move into it and that they were going to be able to set it up with ease. And sure enough, they did. And, I mean, that was it. I mean, he's a brilliant kid. He's going to do big things in the sport.
He's also here supporting somebody from his camp, The Body Shop, MMA fighter turned boxer Anthony Taylor, who's 0-1 as a pro boxer, 7-5 for MMA. He's done work in Bellator. He's, of course, a training partner.
Yeah, but Tommy Fury, who's fighting him, Tommy Fury was talking about Jake Paul. He's like, yo, you got to stop fighting MMA fighters. And I'm like, Tommy?
Tommy, you're kind of fighting an MMA fighter fighting, on bud. Sunday. Yeah. So Tommy Fury would be fighting Anthony Taylor. The hook is that he's a sparring partner in Puerto Rico, part of the extended Jake Paul camp, but he comes from The Body Shop with the McKees there. So that was interesting to see. And they had said, you know, that loud, cocky, brash figure you saw, that was him from day one when they met him. So it's cool to see the connections in this game, Luke.
It is. He was making noise. That dude is trying to make... He DM'd me a little while
ago. Anthony Taylor?
Yeah, he did.
Did he ask for stick pics?
No. He wanted to just talk. And I was on vacation, so I couldn't do anything about it. But, he likes to rattle the cage a little bit. He likes to make noise. I don't know if he's going to beat Tommy Fury, but he's a self-promoter, for sure.
I have to say, Luke, when this pay-per-view card was announced, and it's not only a weird night, it's a, you know, Sunday night, I like the start time, by the way, 8 p.m. Eastern, but it's a 5-fight main card. I think when the fights were announced, you were like, oh, okay, you know, I like that guy, you know, oh, Amanda Serrano, okay, cool. Oh, we got the Tommy Fury thing. But I think as we saw these fights, the storylines play out at the press conference today, I kind of got excited about each one at the potential of action.
The Dubois fight doesn't have any juice right now.
It doesn't have a ton of juice, but Giuseppe Cusumano from Sicily there, he seems ready to bring it.
He does.
That was the guy whose promoter...
I'm interested in seeing Dubois because I think he has a lot of ability.
He's only 23.
Yeah. Obviously, the opener with Fury and Taylor is going to be fun. But dude, we're not talking about it, and I get it because, you know, I looked at the numbers on our interview with her, and you know, it just didn't do very well. Guys, I cannot tell you, I'm not exaggerating. I'm not doing a bit. I'm not doing Showtime's bidding. You can go on YouTube and just type in her name, and you'll see all her fights. You can go take the Pepsi Challenge. Don't, by all means, BC, I'm telling the audience, do not take my word for it. Dude, Amanda Serrano is the best boxer on that card by a mile. It's not even close, both in terms of decoration and what she can do. She is a fucking force. And on top of that, she has an action-oriented style. Her output is insane. And I keep saying this, she is a vicious body attacker. She drops multiple opponents with hard work to the body. I am like, you know, they were doing that bit between her and Jake, like who's going to have the most exciting KO. I don't know who's going to have a KO. I don't know who's going to win. Well, I'm pretty sure Amanda Serrano's going to win. She doesn't get the credit. We're talking about, at worst, as you pointed this out, right? At worst, third best woman boxer on the planet, arguably has a case for number one, 7 weight class titles. She can go from 115 up to 140, even 147, and she's an action fighter. I don't know what's to dislike about that.
Yeah, and she's still in her physical prime. I believe she's 32 years old, and she's coming off maybe the best win of her career against Daniela Bermudez, a champion from 122 who was moving up. We'll see her defending those two titles at featherweight again against Yami Mercado, and it's Puerto Rico versus Mexico, but I love – so you got to expect action. That's the point there, but I love where the confidence in Amanda that she realizes, Luke, that like – she didn't get the backing of like a one network or one promoter that was like, I'm going to make you a star and get you paid at the level and get you the exposure that you deserve. She's always been coming up the hard road that you could see the joy in being in this opportunity. And it's cool that Jake Paul, who trained with her to a certain degree and made friends with her in Puerto Rico, is able to put her as like the co-main event. I support that. I mean, it's the most real boxing fight in a lot of ways on this card, but she feels that you can tell that she understands the opportunity here. And that she's not going to go out there and fight reckless, but she gets that if I can go out there and make some big-time noise, like this could be the launch for me into those money fights that I've wanted but have been unable. I mean, she was really close before the pandemic and fighting Katie Taylor for all 4 lightweight titles, and they didn't end up sending enough money to her, and then Eddie Hearn changed the price, and she pulled out because she felt like she deserved more. And if they can make that price right, I mean, this is the kind of exposure she needs. Let's say she goes out there as we're waiting for Jake Paul and blows away Mercado, people are going to take notice. So it's a great time for women's boxing.
Did you not, hold on, we didn't talk about this because of the melee afterwards, but this is what I wanted to bring up on the post-fight, like post-weigh-in show that we did. She said, guys, remember, we're talking about the bet with Jake. I can't bet a lot. I'm a female boxer. I don't make a lot of money. She's fought in MMA. She's undefeated in MMA, too, because she can't get fucking paid. She can't get the attention she deserves. She's a supreme talent. I think you're going to see that on Sunday night. I really do. I hope, for your point, is that this is a push to something so she can get some fucking coin, man.
Absolutely. And she's had 3 MMA fights. I believe 2 of them were with Combate Global. And in one of them, Luke, she's 2-0-1. I don't know if you've seen her draw. She's dominated the 2 fights she's won in MMA.
The draw I've not seen, actually.
But the draw, she got taken down in the final round and put on her back, and she was in full mount for like 4 minutes getting lit up. And she had to show like every inch of that boxing championship heart and pedigree, like to survive that. She survived that. She got the draw. I loved it.
So was it 2-10-9s and a 10-8 the other way?
I believe so.
Something like that?
She was fairly dominant early herself, but it was just the fight turned.
The ground
game,
she was
lucky to survive that, but it just shows how freaking tough she
is. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't want to take anything from Clarissa Shields. She's earned everything she's gotten. She deserves more, if
anything.
That's
why she's in MMA. That's what it is.
Exactly, but it's not either or. I'm just pointing out, dude, the worm is starting to turn for Clarissa. The worm needs to turn for Amanda Serrano. She is stupid talented.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think maybe... I mean, we do have a UFC fight night Saturday night. We'll preview that during tomorrow's regular morning combat episode. Tomorrow is Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, your regular morning combat time slot. We'll have a full regular fun show for you from this location, and we'll get into it. And you do have Giga, because, God, I'm never going to get that right, am I?
Giga Chikadze?
Giga Chikadze. Why do I want to say Giga, and then I want to say, like, Giga, and...
GG, the movie with J-Lo and Ben Affleck?
I got to put a pin in that.
Or Gigli, was the movie called?
Geely was with J-Lo and Ben.
Ben Affleck, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Courtney perked right up. She knows.
Is that right? It was a bad movie, though, right?
Horrendous. Yeah, okay.
They're back together, though, right?
They're back with a bang, if you will.
Oh, yeah, they're banging.
Yeah,
they're
banging. No question. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. I did have a point to make. Oh, there's a UFC fight that's decent on Saturday night. But like this card is largely going unopposed this weekend. This card, Paul Woodley, in the combat sense, is your top story.
Yeah, folks were asking why it's not on Saturday. It shouldn't be on Saturday. It's a little... is a little weird. It should be kind of separate from everything else. Right?
I think there's potential things that they can gain commercially for going on Sunday night, but I just think it's become the top story. It's taken over. It's crossovered in a big way. Today's Melee certainly helped that. I can't lie. I'm really excited to see what the fight looks like. I have that just basic fan common interest of just like, is Paul really that good? Like, you know, Woodley can't be that washed. Like, this could be a war.
It's wildly unpredictable. Here's what I'm pretty comfortable in saying. It's not going to end the way Paul versus Askren did, where the person who lands the first big shot wins. I don't think that's true.
We're going to get a fight.
But yeah. Beyond that, fuck if I know.
Should be a wild crowd. I hear the tickets are flying. Cleveland's ready to represent. There's a couple of local fighters.
Where we come from.
Charles Conwell is on this undercard. Unbeaten Montana Love is going to have a big fight against Ivan Baranchuk on this pay-per-view main card, both from Cleveland. But, you know, Cleveland has shown up and shown out for Jake Paul. So, Luke, do you want to address just the overall temperature of the haters? Like, we try not to give them the light or shine. You block them. I even block them too when they really make some really inappropriate comments. But you know, there has been, even from some listeners that DM me specifically, they feel like maybe Documentary 4, which was an entertaining success, was about selling out, but it's a tongue-in-cheek selling out. Yeah, we put on the ropes. People think you interviewing Jake Paul yesterday, I don't know what they expect. They're going to walk up and slap him in the face. But people think because you showed that man some respect after originally saying that you hate that shit, that you are really selling out, that they must really be paying you well at Showtime because your ass is down here in Cleveland milking it up for this honky-tonk fight.
I mean, but the fight is not championship level. It's kind of silly. I'm here because I'm paid to be here. All that's true. At the same time, I've said it for weeks at a time, and you can believe it if not. If you don't want to, it's okay too. Whatever choice you want to make. You know, this is not going to be good boxing. It's going to be, could be interesting, fun, but it's not going to be good boxing.
But it's going to be a fight. It's going
to
be a fight.
Right. But
we don't have to shill for that.
But it's true, dude. When Jake Paul had the MMA world tap dancing at everything he was doing, and now Dana White is constantly, dude, the pay issue is only a big deal. It's not because the lawsuit is sort of moving along in a way that's catching news. It's only happening because, predominantly, yes, fighters are complaining, but because Jake Paul is making reporters ask Dana White about what Jake Paul said. That's just a fucking reality about it all. And then on top of it, dude, when he had MMA fighters, you know, fucking huffing and puffing at him for weeks on end, I could not believe they were doing that. And I said on this show over and over and over again, wow, man, this kid is actually surprising me. He's kind of funny. Would I want to dress the way he dresses with the ice and everything else and wear my hat like a jackass? No, like that stuff doesn't appeal to me. But dude, he's got 50% control of this show. He's bringing in Amanda Serrano by choice.
Not this show. He don't control shit.
Not this show. But
Jake Paul, you don't control shit on this show, right? This,
the Sunday event. He's bringing in Amanda Serrano as his co-main event. He's forcing fighter pay into the public consciousness in a way that it hasn't been to this point. Tyron's going to get a record payday. It's silly and not really all that important, but it could be decent, if not good fun. If that doesn't appeal to you, and
why don't you just skip that preamble and just tell him to fuck off?
Yes, SAD is what I would say. I don't care.
Yeah. L and the T want to get with me, cool for the hell of it, right?
Mm-mm-mm. For the smell of it,
they want the bod. Here's the hot rod, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Make me want to shoop, baby. I want to shoop.
Can we get you Adderall,
baby,
please?
Mm-mm-mm-mm. Oh my goodness. And they're coming this way, MK. Luke, can you tell the people, now that we finally have a working schedule for where we'll be this week, where we'll be appearing, we're doing a set at Caroline's in the Comedy Store, also the day after. Tell the people where we'll actually be tomorrow, when they can tune in, where they can see us.
11 a.m. right here on youtube.com/morningcombat. Like and subscribe, as always. We will do a show. We'll preview the weekend's UFC fights. We will get you ready for Paul versus Woodley and anything else. We might do what I'm told is a historic list of dead wrongs. We'll probably
all from my solo runs.
You ever been like so broke you didn't pay a bill? You're like, fuck it, man. I just have to pay a bill when that next big check comes. And then the check comes, and then you do have to pay your fucking bill before they shut the water off. And you're like, dude, how the fuck did my water bill get to fucking $400?
Yeah.
It's because you didn't pay it. Well, we're going to get that $400 water bill tomorrow.
Also, we'll be all over CBS Sports HQ tomorrow. Multiple stops breaking down this fight, setting the stage of what's going on this week. Tonight we will be recording a Room Service Diaries. A lot of people, these guys must go out and do a shit ton of drugs. No, those are done completely sober. So
very sober.
So Luke, Will that go out tonight? What's the plan on that?
That won't go out tonight, but it'll probably go out tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get that out on the streets.
Morning Combat put up a tweet asking, do you want to see Luke Thomas take Brian Campbell to the Dying Fetus concert in Connecticut?
No.
So far, 90% have voted yes. 90%. So guess where you're going, fuckface?
Dude, that I do not support.
Oh, where's
this.
Your art now, pussy?
This is not art. I don't support this.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, like, I mean, you want to talk real music, right? Okay. Damien the Donk had a dying fetus on his bill. Yeah, Damien the Donk's got some dark tattoos, but he's a good bloke, that guy from the 209. Have you listened to at all his new podcast? Two guys, one pod.
No chance.
Two Donks, one pod.
That's like asking me, did you listen from front to back, Killing on Adrenaline by a Dying Fetus? No, you've of course not done that.
It's a funny watch, those two. Shout out to the other guy. So yeah, that's that, Luke. At this point, if I kept talking, it would basically just be a ramble, and I don't like to mince or waste words on this show.
Yeah, here's a tweet from Casey Lydon to our point. Yeah. Boxing fight weeks are just a lot more fun than UFC fight weeks. You never know what's going to happen. That's true.
I think that's why Conor fight weeks in his prime were so batshit crazy and fun for UFC. I mean, seriously.
But he didn't say Conor. He said, like, run-of-the-mill UFC work.
Yes,
that's true.
Yes, yes. Well, look, we have a dynamic personality in Jake Paul. There's no question.
Okay, we can close the show anytime now.
I'm losing my voice. Yeah.
Even the producer is saying we need to wrap it up.
That's me in the spotlight, losing my voice, Luke, okay?
And religion. Michael Stipe. Why don't you go to Athens, Georgia, Kenneth? What's the frequency?
Yeah, all right. Big week for reunions, big week for healing. More to come this week. Big fan of all you out there. Thanks for staying with us. I know we let you down in terms of announcements or timing.
We fucked it up.
We're not always there when you call.
But we're always on time. No, we're not really on time either, but we're back. We back
in a bit, you know, like Pepe at 2 a.m. tonight.
You up?
You gonna come?
¿Qué tal?
Come on, bro. Okay, we brought it. Shout out to our great team who put up with just mayhem this week, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. We love you guys. Some of these guys, I don't even know their names, to be honest. I feel very Luke Thomas-like right now.
They're peasants. I don't care about them.
All right, for Luke Thomas, my name is Brian Campbell. Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, back where we belong in the prime time slot. Until then, may all your ex-lovers stay satisfied.